Hello, and welcome back to Affirmative Action. I'm your host, Antoinette Grajeda. After making its way through the Arkansas Senate, a Stand Your Ground bill stalled in a House committee in early February. However, the bill was brought back later in the month, and after receiving enough votes from that same committee and the full House, it landed on the governor's desk. Senate Bill 24, sponsored by Republican Representative Bob Ballinger, has now become Act 250 after Governor Asa Hutchinson signed it into law. Several people who spoke against the Stand Your Ground legislation voiced concerns about the law disproportionately impacting communities of color. The governor acknowledged those fears and again urged legislators to pass hate crimes legislation. Arkansas is one of only three states without such a law. As we reflect on the passage of the Stand Your Ground law and the possibility of hate crimes legislation, today we'll hear from three Arkansas activists: Benny Johnson, founder and president of the Arkansas Stop the Violence Movement; Sarai Portillo, deputy director for Arkansas United; and Jimmy Warren, a community advocate from Conway. Jimmy says the governor ultimately signing the Stand Your Ground legislation wasn't entirely unexpected.
I think there was a lot of surprise that was met with it. I think, I don't want to say the majority of people, but a lot of people felt like there would be some action from the governor not to sign it. But I think realistically, based on where we are geographically and just with the times, I think in the back of everyone's mind that we knew that he was going to sign it. And then the other part of that is, had he not signed it, or had he chosen to veto it, we knew that it would have gone back, and based on the numbers, that it would have been overturned. So I think that basically in the back of everybody's mind, and then on the forefront of some, we knew that this was going to become law either way. So it still didn't diminish from the hurt and the surprise that actually came about, because, you know, these are one of those laws that we know have traditionally hurt people of color and minorities. So it definitely didn't take away the sting of it, but I think everybody kind of knew what was coming.
I was very disappointed in Governor Asa Hutchinson when he signed the bill. I just met with him previously, face to face, a week before that, and asked him not to sign that bill. It's a terrible bill. And like I said, it has affected definitely blacks. It's just a non-racist bill. And I'm just definitely dissatisfied with what Governor Hutchinson did, because he got a lot of pressure from the community not to do it, but he did it anyway. I told him that if he signed that bill, I told him personally that every person, innocent person, get killed, the blood was going to be on his hand.
Yeah, same here. I guess surprised and sad, because when I was, giving testimony, my intention was to really, for them to hear from my first hand experience living in Florida, when I was organizing in Miami and with both communities, the African American community and the Latinx community, and it was devastated. And I really thought that we have hope, a little bit of hope of no passing here in Arkansas, but based on history and definitely based on, the struggle here in the South, that will be most likely to pass. I just really thought that maybe the governor could have heard something of those testimonies and veto the law or the bill, but it didn't happen. So hopefully, I guess that's what we hear, keep organizing and keep fighting against these bad bills.
Are there any actions that can be taken now, either legislatively or from even just a personal level? You know, the governor, in his formal announcement that he would sign this bill, mentioned that he did hear from a number of people in the minority community who were genuinely afraid and scared of what this would mean. And he said, I believe that that is a genuine fear. So there is this fear. And so how do you, what can you do as someone who is afraid that this will impact you to feel safer, if anything?
Well, I was hoping the American Civil Liberties Union stepped in on it, but I made a phone call to them. I hadn't heard back from them, but I think it's a discriminatory bill, because of who was affected. And like I said, it has affected minorities. And I'm hoping that they will step in. I know it's, you know, you're dealing with this pandemic, and I know they're short staffed. So I'm hoping to hear back to one of them soon. But, you know, it mentions about being gang members and things of that color, but it doesn't say anything about being a white supremacist or a white ring group or anything like that. And I just think it's discriminatory because you look, a lot of gang members, they are of color. So I'm just, you know, looking at the discriminatory aspect of it.
You know, I hate to be pessimistic, but there's not a lot that we can do right now at this moment. I think the best thing that we can do, because we've seen, unfortunately, a lot of bills that, depending on what side of the coin you're on, haven't gone in our favor this session. The best thing that we have right now is that people are feeling some type of emotion behind a lot of these bills that have been passed. So the best thing that we can do right now is organize voters, organize people to run, because it's going to be a fight. So there's not an immediate remedy to stand your ground at this time. But I think the best thing that we can do while people are feeling passionate and motivated by these bills is to organize, get people registered to vote. And then more importantly than that, if you're not already holding your elected officials accountable, putting people in motion to hopefully take their spot at the table and push together those bills that you want to see passed or either repeal the ones that you want to see removed.
Yeah, definitely. I think keep organizing. I think at the end of the day, going to the session, we're still currently in session. And as we speak, actually, some of our team in Arkansas United are giving testimony, right? And I think it's just make them uncomfortable and being there every day. And even though we're on this pandemic and a global health crisis, at the end of the day, our communities are the ones keep suffering, and we need to really step up and organize the communities and build bridges. I know we may sound cheesy, but at the end of the day, if it is not for us, right, like communities of color really coming together and organizing together, is not going to be any changes is not going to be happening without us.
In signing the Stand Your Ground bill into law, the governor did so with the caveat that he wants the legislature to pass hate crimes legislation. Arkansas is one of only three states without such a law. There has been legislation filed, but really no movement on it. You know, last I heard, they didn't think there were enough votes to get it passed, so they were trying to go back to the drawing board to find something that would work. And this isn't the first time that the governor has brought this up. He mentioned hate crime legislation during his State of the State address in January, during which he read letters from Arkansans in support of it. There was someone who mentioned, you know, the importance of doing this for business recruitment. There was a rabbi from Little Rock talking about protecting his congregation. And then, Jimmy, you actually wrote a letter too that he read during that speech. Can you tell me why you felt this was an issue important enough to take the time to write this letter specifically to the governor?
Yeah. So I'm an Arkansas native, lived here all my life. And I think that, you know, not that we have to kind of follow what everyone else is doing, but I think it says something when we are one of the only three states that haven't enacted this law. And this is something that, you know, as much as it's come about recently, Arkansas has been trying to pass it for over a decade now. So it's been on the table before. There's economic value to it. There is systemic value to it. There is just a value of doing what's right in it. And I think essentially that's what it comes down to. I think that, you know, for me, it was just knowing that this could, you know, and it's funny that it's come about with Stand Your Ground law, and for everything that Stand Your Ground now kind of represents, the hate crime legislation could help in that. So should a situation come back where we found that someone has now killed someone and is trying to use the blanket of Stand Your Ground law to help them, hate your crimes could also help the other person benefit from that, should we find out that it was done against them because they were in that protected class. But that was a long way to give a short answer that Arkansas, it's now time to pass hate crime legislation. It's been on the table long enough. We've been at the bottom on so many things before, And I think that this is one of those issues that we really can take a stance to start turning around, and Arkansas can be at the top once again and be one of those greatest states. I think that if with so much that has been passed, this legislation that we've been challenged by, bringing out hate crime legislation would be something that we could all be proud of out of this legislation assembly.
And I think, you're most definitely right. I think what the governor did the other day, too, to sign this stand ground bill to get that hate ground bill passed. But Senator Ballinger, he's adamant against that hate crime bill. But, but he's before the stand your ground bill. Yeah, I mean, you can't have both. You can't have your cake and eat it, too. And I think governor, that he's, look here, you do something for me, I do something for you. And it definitely needs to be, like he said, we want a few states left. And it definitely needs to be here in the state of Arkansas, because, I was telling the governor when I met with him, you don't want it to be to a point, because, you don't want to be to a point where you have a racial divide, a racial overtone in this bill. So this definitely hate crime bill that definitely needs to be passed. I totally agree.
Opponents of hate crime legislation, they say things like they're worried about it restricting religious freedom or freedom of speech to oppose or criticize some lifestyles. What would you say to them as someone who supports hate crime legislation?
Well, for me, I can share a little bit of our perspective in the American community. I think for us, definitely racial profiling is big in our livelihood. You're driving, we share common causes or common issues with so many other immigrants, but also communities of color. And police is one of the biggest fear in the community, just because of classic, the color of your skin or how you look like immigrant, right? Or if you have a thick accent like mine, definitely while you are having conversations with police or when you're being stopped on the light or whomever, right? You just are afraid really of having those interactions. And definitely it's based in how you look, right? And this is something that we definitely are watching really closely. And definitely we have, I guess, two members or maybe three of the Latinx community on that committee as well to make sure that those type of concerns are brought up to the table as well.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm glad you touched on that, too. I don't know if you remember, down in Alexander. Alexander had to pay a big lawsuit out because they were harassing Hispanics down in the city, just stopping them, for no reason. And Alexander had to pay out a big settlement to the city. So nobody deserves to be, discriminated against, because of their color, or how they look, or how they act. And yeah, it definitely needs to be in Arkansas. Like you said, there's three states, and Arkansas is way behind. And it is time to Arkansas legislation step up to the plate and do the right thing.
Yeah, I definitely echo the sentiments of what everyone else has been saying. I think that's just one of those things people call it as a cop out. You can't prosecute someone for the way that they think. That's, of course, we know that's true. You have to have some action behind them, and that's what this seems to protect. So if that's the blanket that they want to hide their thoughts and feelings behind, I just tell them to come with a better argument. Surely that they don't think that people are incapable of understanding that you can think what you want. It's the action part of it that we're looking to defeat. So I'd say if people are thinking that this is something that's kind of like thought policing, then please strengthen your argument against it. There's no way for us to even know what you're thinking unless you're telling us. And then it's the actions against those protected class that we're really after. So and that's just the point about it. Legislation comes with conversation. So if there is something legitimate that you have a problem with or you think could be better, then bring those to the table. But please don't try to dismiss or not go into fully researching or understanding the issue because you think that people are going to police your thoughts.
People that are watching the
legislature this session, I think, understand that at the end of the day, it's a numbers game. And so if you want something to pass, at the end of the day, you have to have a certain amount of people that agree with you. So as much as, you know, people speak out, say, for hate crimes legislation, that it's the right thing to do, right? Or that it's good for business, for recruiting, you have to get enough people that agree with you. So how do you find a way to find that common ground so that you can get to some legislation that offers at least some protection?
You know, that's the beauty of politics and being a politician. There's going to have to be caveats on both sides. There's going to have to be concessions given, because you can look at the numbers. The Republican Party holds the majority in the session on both sides. So there's going to have to be some give and some take, because, and there's going to actually have to be more give than take, I say, because you're right. The one party already holds the keys and can very rightly make a decision based on party lines. But I think it's going to be up to the people of Arkansas to really speak out and voice their opinions and let their people that are elected know how they feel. Because if this is really a people issue that feels so strongly about, I think that we have the voice and the power really to make sure that we get the legislation that we want at the table. So if you're in favor of it, and then in the same tone, if you're not, reach out to your representatives, let them know how you feel, because if they're not hearing from you, they're basically going to just make the decision based off what they're hearing there in the committees and things like that.
You hit the nail right on the head. You definitely have to, you know, put pressure on them, because they are voted in to help their constituents, to look after their constituents. And it definitely going to take a bipartisan effort to get this thing done. So like you said, you have to put pressure on them and look here and say, look here, you serving us and you working for us. So we need you to do what's right. And sometimes you have to just put aside your differences and work for a bipartisan effort. And you know, this, you can get this, you can definitely easily get it passed, but it definitely, you know, brother, you hit it right on the head. You definitely have to put pressure on your elected officials.
Senator Joyce Elliott, earlier in the session, and I think it was in reference to Stand Your Ground, made a comment about how sometimes it feels like legislators design laws based on things that have happened to them. So if the majority of the legislature is white and you're trying to pass something that impacts minorities, that might never happen because it's not something that they've experienced. Part of changing that perspective or having that conversation is folks sharing their stories. And, you know, some of these things are very, very serious and very traumatic and very difficult to speak about. But while we're having that conversation right now, would any of you feel comfortable sharing an instance of a hate crime that maybe you've experienced or someone close to you have?
You know, well, you know, a lot of people are not going to be sensitive to that because they had never stepped in a black man or Hispanic shoes, the ones that we have been discriminated against for many, many years. And a lot of people don't understand it. And, you know, some of your legislation from predominantly, you know, white cities, so they're not going to have the same feeling that someone down in the Delta, you know, black representative from the Delta of Central Arkansas, you're not going to have that same kind of feeling. So we got to learn to be more compassionate, you know, toward different ethnicities. And we definitely have to bridge that gap. No ifs and buts about it. You know, I'm a minister. I'm not here to preach, but God created us all equal, and we all deserve to be created equally. And I hope we can get over this racial gap that's going there. Because, you know, when I spoke to the legislative session, I said, out of all this divide that's going on locally, you know, countywide, statewide, even nationally, that Senator Ballinger should be presenting a bill that's going to bring unity to the state, not divide. And that's what kind of laws that we need to put up, the things that are going to bring unity to us. And I definitely believe strongly in that.
I want to share, you know, this story when I was organizing back in Miami. And I'm sharing this because, you know, I lived 14 years in Miami, and I just recently moved in to Little Rock like a year ago, literally. But while I was organizing, one of the hate crimes that we heard of was about, you know, a worker, an immigrant worker just walking by. And people know that, you know, so many of our folks doesn't have bank accounts. And when they get paid, they have their money on them, right? They just have it on their under the mattress or at home or whatever, right? So he was just coming back from work and he was assaulted because that was payday, right? And they knew that he got some cash on him. And, you know, unfortunately that happened, right? He was beaten up and he was robbed and he was just all the money that he was working, right? And got stolen for that experience. So definitely something that we've seen very often. And maybe we don't see them on the news because definitely those are stories that are just there and they keep it because they don't want to, you know, denounce it on the police or they want to make a, you know, a statement because then they are afraid of being deported, right? So it's a chain of like events that they are avoiding not to to have because definitely there's going to be consequences against them.
Yes, man. And you're right. You I've had to work with the Hispanic community. This young, I can't remember his name, but worked with the domestic consulate office. And we had a couple of homicides out here in South Little Rock where Hispanics got killed. And I got with Terry Hastings. He's a retired captain of Little Rock Police Department. And, you know, a lot, you know, afraid, like you said, afraid of the banks. Well, a lot, well, quite a few Hispanics, they afraid of police, think they're going to be deported. But what happened in this situation, we got with the Mexican consulate office and Captain Hastings, and the two of the homicides were able to be solved because the people stopped being feared of being deported, and they gave the information over. And I think both of those arrests was, I think, within, I think, 24, 48 hours. So, you know, I'm looking forward to working with you. I'm getting all your information because, you know, again, you know, I worked with the Little Rock School District for 30 years. I was security supervisor, and I treated every one of those kids, I don't care, white, black, Hispanic, equally. And I go and see kids picking on Hispanic kids, and it just eats me up to see kids that been mistreated, anybody being mistreated. And like I say, God created us all equally, and we should all treat each other equally. And no one should be able to walk in fear because of their nationality or how they look. And I'm glad we're having this conversation because we should be willing to work with anyone. And I thank God for you having us all for this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thank you for having just the space for this. I think there's so many examples. It's not can you share one. It's do we have enough time for everybody just to submit how many times that this has happened. From things that aren't even just against the law, but things that happen systemically in the education system, things that happen. We just saw a law signed into, or a law that passed for the medical professional to basically be allowed to discriminate against people because of their belief system. So we see these things happen every day. So it's not just, can you name one instance? It's, do we have time so people can name their, talk about their truths and what's happening to them every day.
If hate crimes legislation doesn't pass at the state level, is it something that maybe folks should look at a local level? The Fayetteville City Council, for example, in October, I believe, passed a hate crimes ordinance. Is that something that might be helpful? You know, if enough places around the state do that, then maybe that would garner more support that way. You know, I think when things don't necessarily go someone's way, they want to take some kind of action. So is that something that you think would be plausible?
It'd be possible, but you know, it's gonna take some, you know, it'll take a lot of effort, a lot of participation, and a lot of willingness, you know. But it can be done. No ifs and buts about it.
Well, I really hope that it passes statewide, you know, because that was one of the governor's promises, right? That he was advocating for it. So he was like, okay, this is the issue. Let's figure it out like a committee, right, to deal with this issue. And then based on those recommendations, I'm going to be taking action. So I think it will be a shame if he doesn't go through what he was proposing. So Yeah, definitely statewide. That will be interesting just to see it working out on the local level. But why, you know, to create more work than what we already have, right? So I think it statewide is the way to go. And if not, we're going to be pushing back and fight.
Agree. Right. Yep, 100%.
Since we are still in the legislative session, you know, you've all spoken about the importance of everyday Arkansans reaching out to legislators or the representatives, you know, and letting them know how they feel, either for or against. But say that, you know, since it is a sensitive subject, like Sadie said, you know, some people don't want to come forward for a number of reasons. Is there a way for someone to share their story and still be protected? Like, if I don't feel comfortable going to one of those committee meetings and sitting at the table and sharing about the time that I, you know, experienced a hate crime to that room of strangers, is there, can I tell that story to, you know, a specific advocacy group and have that story shared that way so that I get to protect my anonymity, but still feel like I'm contributing? I think part of the issue here is sometimes people feel strongly about a certain issue or even have a story to tell, but they don't know how to share that.
Yeah, I think you actually answered your own question. You work with those affinity groups that are there and share your stories through them and have them pass it up. But even then, reach out to your representatives and share your story to them. Just say, hey, I live in your district. I'm a voter. I don't want to give you my specific information or be tied back to this issue, but this is what I've experienced. You know, we live in the age of technology where everything isn't so hidden, but you can just write a letter, say this, I live there. You don't have to necessarily have a name tied to it, but you still can have your anonymity and still share your story. And I would encourage people, if you feel passionate about it and you don't want to be tied to it, still, you know, find a way to share your story. Reach out to other individuals who can share that story for you as well.
Are there some specific groups that you could recommend if someone's listening to this and they're like, yeah, this is something that I want to do, but I don't even know who to contact. I don't even know where to start. Who might you recommend in the state?
Well, definitely Arkansas United. if you want to, you know, that's what we do. We organize the community and we empower people to really feel enough powerful to share their stories. If they're not there yet, right, and they don't want to share the story because they don't feel, ready for it, we don't pressure them, right? We, as my colleague said, Jimmy, we can just work with them, sharing their stories, blurring up their face, just to make sure, you know, that story is out there, right? But definitely reach us out. We have a Facebook account, Messenger is the quickest way, believe it or not, to get a hold on us. Otherwise, we have a office number too and a hotline.
Yep. I'll second that again. Arkansas United, your local NAACP chapters, depending on where the issue falls, you can reach out to, if you want just to go through a legislative organization, you can reach out to the Black Caucus. And I don't know if it was just specific to these issues, but with any issues, reach out to your local chambers of commerce. Any faith-based communities, you have to do a little bit of due diligence on your part to match the issue with the right direction that it goes, whether it be something that's more of a justice-related issue or if it's something that economic development. But there's people out there. You can just do even something as, I wouldn't diminish something as simple as Facebook groups that you see online, all those coalition buildings that are there. Anytime that something that you feel passionate about, there's a group out there. And the beautiful thing about living now is if there's something that you're passionate about and there's not a group out there, maybe that's your sign or your empowerment to start and be that group that's there. Whatever it is that you're passionate about or whatever issue it is that you see, there's somebody that's out there. And if you can't find that somebody, then chances are that you are the somebody who's going to be leading that charge.
What advice would you have for people that maybe are new to, say, advocating for these issues? Advice in terms of staying motivated. You know, I think a lot of times people are discouraged from being consistent participants in the legislative process because you know, they get really into that one issue that they want to, you know, the thing that gets them hooked, right? That they fight for, and then it doesn't go their way. And so they're like, okay, the process doesn't work. I'm busy. I don't have time. How do you, as people who are, you know, in the trenches every day, you continue to advocate and work towards different things, even when you're told no, you know, how do you keep going? What motivates you to keep going? And how, what kind of advice or experience, I guess, from your experience, what would you share with folks that are maybe newer and aren't necessarily active every day, but would maybe like to explore becoming more vocal or more of a participant in the legislative process?
You got to just keep on, you know, persevering. I know in my field, dealing with, you know, violence, I buried a lot of young men and young women that got killed. You know, you feel like giving up, and every time you feel like giving up, it's just inside of you say, you know, I got to keep on going ahead, because if I don't do it, you know, who else is going to do it? So that, you know, help keep you motivated. And a lot of, you know, time you get called, I get calls and say, man, we really need you. Because I've had, it's been several times, and it's 30 years since I started to stop the violence movement. And, you know, just people encouraging. And, you know, and again, not preaching, but it's a, you know, scripture in the Bible where David got up and he encouraged himself. And sometimes that's what you have to do. Just have to encourage yourself. And just, you know, keep persevering and keep fighting. Sometimes you got to look at it. If I don't do it, who's going to do it?
Prioritize is going to happen. You're going to get tired. You're going to get depressed. You're going to get mad. It's a given. I would say just prioritize your mental health, and then just celebrate the wins, no matter the size, because there's going to be defeats, but the wins will come. And so with any win, just make sure that you stay grateful for those and celebrate those, you know, all the times, because we've seen a lot of, at least me personally, and just where I fall, we've seen a lot of losses this session, but we have seen a few wins. So just trying to celebrate those as those come about.
Totally agree. I think definitely, you know, take your time for yourself, you know, get some rest, drink water if you're an organizer, right? I think for me personally, you know, I'm just thinking 100 years ago, like 200 years ago, right? Like people that that fought for us, right? And for our rights. And I'm thinking about the civil rights movement, the farm workers movement, right? Back in California, like they were really tired, and they were like, probably sad and depressed at some point, but at the same time, you know, it's because of the rights that we have the privilege to have right now. It's because of that tireless, right? And that the spirit of the struggle. So I think for me, every morning that I wake up, every morning that I think I'm here, is because I'm reading, and it's because so many other freedom fighters that were there for our generation to have the right to speak up. And that's what I tell myself every day, to be able to continue. And I agree. I think celebrating with the small victories, celebrating maybe somebody who hasn't spoke before in their lives publicly, and they're speaking out for the first time on the legislative session, I think that's a victory by itself.
Any final thoughts or issues that you would like to bring into this space?
We got to get people organized to first of all, register to vote and to vote and make changes, you know, in our legislation. You know, and we can see a big difference. But until then, a lot of people gripe about, well, we don't have this and we don't have that. But a lot of people won't vote. And then when they register to vote, they won't go out and say, my vote don't count. Yes, your vote does count. And we come together collectively, we can get a lot of things done. And like, you know, our motto, together we stand, divided we fall. We have to do it together. There's no I in teamwork, so we have to be we instead of I. And we can get a lot of things done.
Yeah, 100% to all your listeners out there, organized. That's going to be the big key. And a lot of it goes just to my generation, millennials and Gen Z, right on the cusp of both of those, who are younger, and a lot of us sometimes feel like our vote don't count. But I think we've shown that we have the ability to make things go viral. We have the ability to get booms in the technology world. And now it's time for us to make that shift to make voting go viral, make organizing go viral. Because as much as we have a voice and a presence on social media, we've got to bring that into this political sphere, because the future relies upon us. And there's a lot of us that feel the same way and are voicing our opinions so strongly on social media and our different channels and avenues. So I think we've got to unify those things and make real change. And I think it's going to come. I think if nothing else, this session has been a catalyst. The COVID-19, people being treated unfairly. We've seen bad laws enacted. I'm hoping that this is going to be that spark where we see real change take place in Arkansas.
Our guests today were Benny Johnson, founder and president of the Arkansas Stop the Violence Movement, Sarai Portillo, deputy director for Arkansas United, and Jimmy Warren, a community advocate from Conway. Thank you all once again for taking the time to speak with us. So that's all we have for today's episode. And remember, you can listen to past editions of our podcast at argotsoul.com/affirmativeaction. You can also subscribe and rate our show on Apple Podcasts. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next month with a brand new episode. Until then, take care.